Well, good morning, folks. Thought I would start this morning with a story. And it's the story of a man who decides that he's going to go to an exclusive restaurant in town, a black tie affair only. So he approaches the dining room and he is met by the chap on the door, who explains that he cannot get in without a tie. Not having one with him, the man returns to his car, thinks for a moment, and then retrieves some jump leads from the goods. He ties them around his neck and walks straight back towards the restaurant. Upon seeing him, the man asks, "What do you call that around your neck?" "That's all I've got for a tie. Please let me in." After much argument and negotiation, the man finally relented. "Oh, all right, I'll let you go in this time. But once you're inside, don't start anything." Okay, so my jokes are clearly getting worse. But I use it because to me it speaks of requirements and expectations and a bit of compromise too. On a Sunday when we're called to think about a church in a place where something had started that threatened to have disastrous consequences for those who did not have ears to listen. As a quick recap, several weeks ago, we read about the church in Ephesus, how they had forgotten their first love and were urged to turn from their sins and do what they had done at first. Then we heard about the church in Smyrna, how they were poor yet rich in spirit, and although being persecuted by those outside the church, were urged to be faithful and persevere. And then last week, we heard about the church in Pergamum, and how there were some there who were following the teaching of Balaam, eating food that had been offered to idols, and practicing sexual immorality, being seduced by the culture that surrounded them. This week, we hear about the church in Thyatira. And in many respects, the complaints against those people are very similar to those in Pergamum. Yet this place is different, and its story is unique. So, just what do we know about it? Well, in honesty, not a great deal. As one commentator pointed out, the longest of the letters was written to the church in the smallest and the least important of the seven towns. Nevertheless, we do know that it was situated some 35 miles from Smyrna. It was a valley that connected two other valleys together, making it very advantageous when it came to fighting battles and protecting the capital. And whilst not a centre of religious importance, it was a great centre of commerce, a place of prosperity and wealth, home to wool workers, linen workers, makers of garments, dyers, leather workers, tanners, and potters. Indeed, some of you might remember that from our journey through the book of Acts, you will recall that Lydia, who was converted by Paul, was a dealer in purple cloth from Thyatira. So it is in this place that the church finds herself. And to all intents and purposes, the initial message is good, isn't it? In fact, it's better than that. It's great. I know what you do. I know your love, your faithfulness, your service, and your patience. I know you are doing more than you first did. Wow. To most eyes, this was an active, healthy, diverse church that was growing, emerging and progressing in exactly the right direction, doing more now than it had done at the beginning. For unlike the church at Ephesus, it hadn't forgotten its first love. No, it had most definitely remembered. And as a result, they were commended by the one who knows everything and everyone. For the service that is mentioned here is not just general deeds, however good they may be, but were works of persevering witness to the outside world. A witness to the way of justice in a world that is indifferent to need. A witness to the way of love in a world that is full of wars. A witness to the way of humility in a world that is so full of pride and self-importance. In a word, a witness to the way of Jesus that will not be compromised. Which brings to a sharp end the praise in Thyatira. But it would seem that compromise is exactly what some were engaging in. Not because of persecution nor state control from the outside, but because of pressure, influence, and false teaching from within. From those whom it has been suggested propose to face the world with the most dangerous of all doctrines, the doctrine of compromise. I don't know about you, but up until this week, I had always considered that compromise was actually quite a good thing. And just out of curiosity, I thought we'd have a quick show of hands. Who thinks that on the whole, compromise is mostly good? Yeah, quite a few. And you say, no, that's rubbish. Compromise is definitely bad. Hands up. Well, that's very interesting. Most people think that it's a good thing. Cooperation, negotiation, and a bit of give and take is surely important for healthy relationships. Indeed, it's been suggested that in marriage, compromise is an amicable arrangement between a husband and a wife, whereby they agree to let the wife have her own way. Perhaps the cartoon shows it all well. I think it was a husband that got the raw deal there. He wanted to go to the seaside and I wanted to do the garden. So we compromised. Maybe therein lies the problem with compromise. For while in the face of it, a win-win situation might look like the expected outcome, when it comes to compromise, there is always going to be cost and there's always going to be loss. Yet for some of the Christians in Thyatira, it seemed like a worthwhile training to get the best of both worlds, move ahead and make a living in that valley. You see, with all the successful buying and selling came trade guilds. And it's believed that in Thyatira, they had more trade guilds than any other town her size in Asia. So what, we may ask ourselves? Well, in a day when we remember and celebrate the work of the guild, let us not forget their motto, which is this: whose we are and who we serve. Folks, the people, some of them in the church in Thyatira, had forgotten those guiding principles, and we ourselves would do well to remember them, to remember whose we are and whom we serve. For you see, these trading guilds were concerned not with helping others, but with helping themselves, making sure that they were getting ahead in the world of business and caring little about what they were doing and what they weren't doing in the process. They attended common meals and festivals, were filled with sacrifice to different gods. They drank wine until drunkenness ensued. Then they got up to all sorts of stuffs that might well have left them regretful in the morning. Why? Well, it would seem that a trader, Christian or otherwise, would not hope to prosper or make money unless they were a member of the appropriate trade guild. To walk out, leave or dissociate oneself from their guild was to risk ridicule, poverty and persecution, and ultimately to lose their standing within society. Sitting here today, I hope we all know that what matters most is not earthly gain or advancement, but God's heavenly reign seamless progression. Yet there was one who reckoned and taught that you could compromise, that you could have it all. Indeed, in a week when the BBC are advertising the drama series Women That We Loved, which will retell the story of the likes of Enid Blyton, Gracie Fields and Margaret Fonteyn, there will be one woman, I'm pretty sure, won't be up there with the greats. Her name? Jezebel. Yet, making all sorts of suggestions as to who this Jezebel is, including the wife of the bishop of the church in Thyatira, the local Jewish oracle, and folks, some have even suggested that Lydia herself might have been this Jezebel, but all of these are deemed to be unlikely. What seems far more probable is that this derogatory, disparaging nickname is given thanks to the Jezebel that we find in the Old Testament, daughter of the king of Sidon and wife of Ahab, whose ways were hardly loving, humble, and just. It's been reminded that she worshipped before the false god Baal, had large number of God's prophets killed, replacing them with her own, and to top it all off, she falsely accused and had executed Naboth, so her husband could get his greedy hands on his vineyards. It's someone like this Jezebel whom the church tolerates, who calls herself a messenger of God's, whose teaching deceives, and whose ways Jesus cannot stand nor abide no more. Enough is enough. Because by her teaching, she misleads his servants into cross-denying, self-indulgent religion, leading them to believe that they can have the best of both worlds, for anything goes, live and let live. Now I hear you crying. That's all well and good. You've given us a background, you've showed us the error of some of those Christian ways. What do you want us to do with it? Well, it goes without saying that cross-denying self-indulgent religion seems to me it's not confined to the church of history, but is still very much present in the church of today, and is an error that we ourselves are called to avoid. For we are to be salt and light in the world, to be different in a world that desperately needs to be shown the flavour and the flame of love. Love that says uncompromisingly, no, everything does not go. A love that says uncompromisingly, no, I will not do anything that denies the way of Christ. A love that says uncompromisingly, no, I will not be party to situations, conversations and events in the workplace, at school, in the shops, in private at home, that requires me to renounce God's reign in my life. But let us not kid ourselves. What we look at, listen to and participate in does affect us, body, mind and spirit, sometimes causing harm and causing change that is not for the good. It is such things that we are called to turn away from, ask forgiveness for, and choose the way of life, avoiding at all costs compromise that leads to unfaithfulness and deceit. We have a choice. We can choose to remember that when it comes to our standing, it doesn't matter about our standing so much in the community, but our standing before God. And when we remember that, we know that we all fall short, all are susceptible to stumbling, and therefore rather than judge others, recognise our own need for God's gracious and merciful love. And having done so, I hope we'll choose to be like the followers in Thyatira, who have not followed the teaching of Jezebel, but have held firmly to the teaching, followed the teaching of Jesus, who hold firmly to what we have and what we need, to keep on loving, rather than being seduced by and chasing after the compromising things of the world that we don't have, but often want. Let us not cut corners in a bid for self-advancement. Let us not pay less at the expense of others getting more. Let us not compromise ourselves for sinful pleasures by forgetting whose we are and whom we serve. For Christ's claim and his word in our lives is uncompromising and blatantly clear. He will not tolerate rivals. He will not stand for teaching that deceives. He will not abide compromise when it threatens to mislead people from the way. As a church, we are expected to be different. We are required to worship God and God alone. We are called to follow the morning star, Jesus Christ, whose promises are enough to keep us going, showing love, not only in word of speech, but in truth and action, witnessing to the one who was, who is, and who is to come, and who reigns now and forever over all. Let us pray.